Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your Health Information Technology conference call. All lines are in interactive mode, and we ask that you please refrain from placing your phones on hold. If you need to mute your line and do not have a self-muting feature on your phone, at the conclusion of my opening remarks, you may press star then six on your touch-tone telephone. If anyone should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Suzanne Columbus, HIT Project Manager for IPRO. Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Yolanda. Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today for the second call in our series of health information technology calls. Before we get started, I just want to reiterate to everyone where you can find your materials for today's call. You just log on to Jenny, which is http://jeny.ipro.org. Go on to the improvement, you know, under hospital, of course. Improvement, organizational cultural change, SIAC, HIT. And the slide that we're going to be using for the basis of this call today is the System Selection Conference Call. It's just the name of the document, and that's a Word document. And we have a very nice PowerPoint presentation. So if you could just pull up the PowerPoint presentation. It's titled 619 PowerPoint, something like that, 619-07. And we are joined today by Marguerite Schaefer, the Senior Director of the HICCUP Department here at IPRO, the Healthcare Quality Improvement Department. And we also have a guest speaker joining us today. I'm going to introduce him in a few minutes. We are very, very excited to have him on our call today. Just briefly, before we get started on our call, some quick news and notes. I had been going through some different research that I was looking at, and I came across something in the May-June edition of Patient Safety and Quality. The magazine is called Patient Safety and Quality Healthcare, and it focuses on integrating point-of-care barcoding. Really, quite a few good articles are in this. One of the articles is called Improving Safety with Barcode-Enabled Medication Administration. It's really interesting, and I'm recommending that you take a look at it. There's another one called Point-of-Care Medication Error Prevention, Best Practices in Action. And the last one is Improvement in Healthcare is Possible, Just Be the Ball, by Ron Wentz. Kind of interesting article. It's about understanding end-to-end process or the value stream for care delivery. The article describes the patient stream, which is an approach for systemic diagnosis of the entire stream of actions from diagnosis through reimbursement. It's really pretty good. I liked it a lot. I got a lot of value out of the article. And final housekeeping. A reminder, if you could all please work on your Journaling the Journey tool. That's the tool that I put it up on our last call, and it's up on today's call as well. If you could work on that, and if you need assistance, please give me a call, and I'll walk you through it. And that's it for our news and notes. I hope that wasn't too quick. And also, since you're not muted, if you would like to interject, if I'm going too quickly or if there's something that you don't understand, please feel free to let me know. The objectives of today's call are the planning and selection of an HIT implementation. So, without further ado, I would like to introduce Peter Cunningham, the Associate Director of Applications and Telecommunications at Winthrop University Hospital, which is a 591-bed university-affiliated medical center and Level 1 trauma center. Peter handles the development of the tactical and long-range IT strategic plans. He's successfully managed the system selection, contract negotiations, and implementation of multiple IT solutions at prominent facilities all over the country, not just Winthrop. And currently at Winthrop, Peter has been leading his team in selecting and implementing a CPOE system. And in addition to all of that, Peter wrote the HEAL grant for Winthrop, which they received $750,000, for which they're using toward the implementation of an electronic health record system. So welcome, Peter, and thank you so much for being on the call.
Thank you, Suzanne. That was a great introduction. Let's see if I can live up to it.
I'm sure you will.
We're actually going to start in the PowerPoint presentation on page 6, which is titled First Steps. When speaking with Suzanne, when she asked me to first approach this topic, she said that she would really like to focus on the establishment of the communication structures and the committee structures for doing the selection and implementation, or the whole process for implementing a major system. And I'm going to focus on two, which is CPOE and our ambulatory EMR. And if I use any acronyms or lose anybody, please just stop me and jump in and ask for some further description. But on page 6, what I did, the first thing I thought I would do is, keeping with Susan's suggestions, was to add a table showing our governance and oversight structure. This structure was put in place over 4 or 5 years ago. Even prior to doing the selection and the negotiations and the implementation of our CPOE efforts, we established the committees to set up the strategic planning and to go through where we needed to be in the future. We had actually engaged Kurt Salmon Associates and used them to write a very initial strategic plan, which highlighted our need for the things we needed to accomplish, basically focusing on two areas, our infrastructure and our clinical information systems. So it was known almost 5 or 6 years ago what our direction was going to be. During that period, KSA highlighted that many of our ancillary and departmental systems were up to 5 and 6 levels behind current support. So we spent the first 3 years, and our networks as well, were not at a gigabit speed, and they were behind technology. So we spent the first 3 years on these efforts just bringing other systems up to speed. For example, the first actual application we had to upgrade prior to doing CPOE was our pharmacy system. As everybody knows, integration is critical, and many of us actually have order communication systems in place for many of our ancillaries, but few have done it for the pharmacy system. The pharmacy system, when you're moving towards CPOE and med administration, is probably the most critical on that integration piece between the physicians on the front end, the pharmacy itself, and the nursing dispensement component on the tail end of the implementation. So the first thing we had to do was make sure we had strong integration. We are using Siemens products, and we did use both Siemens pharmacy and CPOE product, and we did that because we knew we had to have that tight integration. And then after there, we had also upgraded our radiology, our laboratory, many of our departmental major feeds into our CPOE environment. On the network side, we had to look at almost every closet we had in this hospital, and there's quite a number, probably 30, as well as replace our network core, bring in fiber, and get us up to speed. That was not only necessary for the bandwidth to support CPOE and these applications, but at the same time, concurrently, we brought in Siemens CNET PACS system. And we are displaying images up on the floors to the base point where we're pretty much paperless in terms of, or filmless in terms of radiology. Additionally, we brought in the HeartLab cardiac system, which is now owned by AGFA. And again, with the images that we're requiring flying around this hospital at high speeds, we had to get that network in shape, and we have. Now back to the challenges and page 6, which shows our governance structure. Of course, the board of directors played an integral part in all of this. We've had, in general, 1 to 2 presentations a year to our joint board, which is our executive medical council and our board of directors to the hospital. The Office of the President, consisting of our COO, CFO, and CIO, were critical in bringing this forward to them. Our major administrative backer on these efforts was our CFO at the time, Mr. John Collins, who is now also our COO. He's holding dual responsibilities in the interim of a new CFO coming on board. But John was the champion in pushing this forward, gaining the financial backing, and actually pushing it with the board members. The medical board, through the Executive Medical Council, came on board through many presentations, including our Quality Assurance Committee for the hospital. The creation of the actual committee started at that point down. First, we knew we had to have an Information Technology Executive Committee, which would provide the governance and oversight, and which would also, when we had a decision that needed to be made, we would push them up to that committee. For example, resources we knew we were going to be stressed with. We run very lean for a hospital in IT and in the hospital itself, as just about everybody does today, and I'm sure you're in the same position. But what we had to do, they challenged us to define our needs, bring them up, and give them the alternatives. And that's what we had to bring up through this clinical advisory committee up to the executive committee. For example, in the pharmacy, many people would look at doing medication administration and barcoding first. We consciously made the decision to do CPOE first here, although it's kind of a unique aspect. Barcoding may be easier, but we realized if we were to do medication administration first, we would have had to hire between 6 and 8 pharmacists to backload the pharmacy system on floor stock and things that were residing up on the paper chart but not fully documented in the pharmacy system. By doing CPOE first, we are capturing all physician orders up front, doing away with the floor stock approach and going more to a unit dose-based type of system. Thereby, we didn't have to hire those pharmacists. Yes, we're throwing a bit more of a burden up on the nursing floors and on the nursing and the clinical staff, but they have agreed to take that challenge. So that's an example of how some of the major decisions going up. We have hired one additional pharmacy informatics person, but we didn't have to hire 6 to 8 additional pharmacists to backload and maintain the pharmacy system. The next level down is the CIS Clinical Advisory Committee. This committee was crucial to this implementation from the very, very beginning. From the day we signed the contract, the next month, we had this advisory group together, and it consisted of directors and the heads of the departments that were most affected. For instance, we had, from the pilot unit we were going on, we had both the head nurse and the director of that unit sitting on the committee. And then from there down, we actually broke out, and I'll have further examples into the discussion, on clinical work groups, which were also critical on defining not only design characteristics and putting the system together, building the profiles, building the tables, but pushing up to the clinical advisory committee when they were hitting roadblocks. The financial and the technology subcommittee we have off to the side here because they did not report directly to the CIS. They were reporting to the executive committee. On the next page, I actually have a further breakdown. And one of the things we learned is that over time, as we became better at doing this, if that's possible, we actually developed and the committee structures changed. In the beginning, we had only a handful of work groups. And as of about 6 months ago, this next page, the title having the CIS subcommittees were defined and emerged over time, we actually broke the CIS advisory committee into two. One of the largest challenges we found was about the time we went up with pilot, we were hitting on clinical QA questions. In other words, how you design the system will impact the quality of care directly. And some of those decisions required direct input from our quality assurance subcommittees. What we then did was create a clinical regulatory committee to make sure that the changes we were deploying were going to be fitting the clinical requirements on a regulatory side. Additionally, there were quality metrics versus you'll see metrics on both sides of the fence that really needed to report up to the QA and risk management arms of the hospital. On the CIS advisory committee side, the physician and nursing design committee actually started off as two committees. We found we had to join the two because one of the biggest challenges in implementing CPOE was the communication from the front end to the tail end of nursing, not nursing, but of patient care. For example, a physician enters an order, and one of the biggest challenges we had was times of administration. The doctor writes 2 times a day, and the pharmacy system interprets it as, okay, 2 times a day, but now I have a computer system, and it wants to know what time during the day. The physician doesn't particularly care, but nursing is very caring about when these things happen. So to go from the physician through the pharmacy to nursing, we had to standardize across the house, although we had them in the bylaws. They were not strictly enforced to the level of this needs to be dispensed or 8 o'clock, 2 times a day now becomes 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. It's very different, and it doesn't necessarily mean we put the drug in the patient or dispense to the patient at that exact time, But the tightening up the communications in the full loop of physician, pharmacist, nurse, very, very critical to the success of this. And we are about to go live with MAC within the next month. So it's been a long road, but I have some slides. We'll go through that. Post-live issues, mainly this was just change management and prioritization. When we went live with our pilot over a year ago, we probably found in the neighborhood of 150 to 200 things that needed to be changed. And I'm not going to use the word fixed. Some of them may not be broken. It was just the way the clinicians practiced and the way they wanted to interact with the system, we had massive changes that had to occur. And this positive post-live issues group actually brought together our ancillary services, laboratory, pharmacy, radiology, and the design team and many of the major players to look at the changes, prioritize them, and make sure that we were meeting the needs around the house, not just on one side of the fence. The MAC committee has been very, very aggressive and successful in the last 5 or 6 months, actually putting together medication administration check, barcoded med dispensement. We are using Siemens, which is natural for us. And at this point, they are shaking that system out. When I talk about the timelines and milestones, I'll speak a little bit about what we had to do with some of our pilots. But one of the things they're doing right now is sitting locked in a room with pharmacists, nurses, and physicians, pulling charts and walking through real-life patients to see what happens. Testing is critical, and the communication between these groups has facilitated unbelievable change in process and workflow for us up on the floors. The documentation committee is a little behind right now in that we've purchased nursing assessments and care planning and major documentation from Siemens, but we did not make that our initial thrust. We are looking at the assessment component because we want to get the vital signs in for the medication administration. And that should be coming up when we go live with MAC. Medication administration is slated now, the first unit to go up in July, and then follow our rollout of CPOE units as they come online. And I'll speak about that a little farther on. The metrics group, when we started this project, we identified financial, clinical, and administrative metrics that we expected to be met on the project. We have not been very rigorous in actually going back and checking them, mainly because the staff is dedicated to doing the rollouts. That's more prominent, but the metrics are defined. So that's some of the subcommittees that we have structured here to make this work, and they definitely vary by organization. When I was consulting and I was at other organizations, this may not be the committee structure that I would have formulated for another institution. For example, at Johns Hopkins was very different because you're dealing with multiple entities. And it's not the same as we're dealing with here. You don't have to cross additional boundaries. But just be aware that every governance structure will vary depending on roles, politics, responsibilities, prominent people in your organization. If you look at the next page, we actually have a further breakdown of our committee structures. There's a line that goes off the page here, and there is a breakdown of the subcommittees, so I left the line just showing there's more underneath. But when you look at this, I did it purposely to put in the names of the people that are on the committees and their titles, so you can see the broad aspect of the types of people we've included. I have participated in one site at the University of Kentucky where they created committee structures of 100-plus people. We did not want to do that. Committees that are huge, I believe, don't necessarily drive towards your vision or your goals. And we tried to structure this so that we had the prominent players in place that could make the decisions. In both cases, the committees, if you notice on the right, are chaired by physicians. When we started the process, through discussion with our then CFO, John Collins, I said, John, why would you not sub-chair executive committee and let myself sub-chair the clinical systems committee? And he said, no, I want physicians leading these groups. So that's the way it came out. And to the end, I really believe that was a great decision. These two doctors, Dr. Stephen Fishbane and Dr. Anthony Callio, really stood up and from the clinician's perspective, participated in the design, oversaw the committees, and made some very valuable clinical decisions, which the others on these committees would not probably have come to the same decision point. But from a multidisciplinary aspect, you can see from the committees, especially the advisory committee, that they were mostly directors and managers and people who could make the decisions within the operational and workflow environment to enforce change, critical to success of CPOA. From there, I'm going to move on. Susan also requested that I speak about system selection and planning. As mentioned in the introduction, our planning cycle began over 6 or 7 years ago. And I did mention some of the highlights, but we knew that we had to get the CPOE. Part of the issue was convincing ourselves. Our CEO and president believes in technology, but he also believes that it has to be proven. And everybody knows with CPOE, it's a hard thing to prove, the outcomes and the benefits. To the extent, though, the board and our CFO, John Collins, and our CEO all agreed that we should pursue this. And mainly now with the quality measures, core measures, and things that are going on, we're finding it hugely successful in helping us meet some of our CMS and other quality initiative demands. The physicians who are designing the system using the base Siemens tools are actually building the indicators into the workflow, and they're building in decision support right up front so that we're capturing a lot of the major requirements. So it's been a great process. But if you look at this chart, and I apologize, it's a little busy, but it does pretty well capture our selection process. The internal RFP was developed in 2002, and again, we use Kurt Salmon Associates. I'll make a kind of sly comment here, but I was a partner at KSA when I left there 7 years ago. So at that point, they stopped using KSA, and I took over from there. Basically, I actually developed parts of the RFP they use as their standards, so I knew how to do the fit and negotiations and the strategy analysis. So with that, we jumped into our first round. We issued the RFP, and if anybody's done a large selection in the past, part of establishing an RFP and doing the negotiations is critical to establishing the vendor relationship. When you look at an RFP, you know the first numbers are going to be exploded, and they're going to be high. So not only from a feature function aspect in gaining the critical clinical functions and initiatives you need to manage that vendor and establish the baseline for the dollar negotiations. If you look here on the secondary line on the actual arrow chart, you actually see how the costs came down. And that was through the RFP analysis demonstration and other processes. We were able to negotiate with the vendors. We started our process, as mentioned on the bottom, with 6 vendors. And one of the things we decided was we were going to focus on our incumbent vendors. With the exception of Meditech, every other vendor on the list was in-house. And what we were looking for was tight integration on that end. And at the outcome, of course, Siemens as our core HIS, we were already doing PM order communication and patient accounting, was a natural fit, as well as we had an older version of their pharmacy. But we did go through this process, and we did very much look at the other vendors, and Eclipsis was very close in the long run. Basically, it came down to was how much risk did we want to take and how much pressure did we want to put on our clinicians and our environment to bring in another vendor. And at that point, we did decide to negotiate strongly with Siemens. And Siemens did come to bat for us. They really have. Through purchase of equipment as well as software and hardware, they were able to provide us with a very lucrative deal for the CPOE software and moving forward. This is, again, a very busy slide, but it does show some of the steps we took along the way. We didn't actually sign the contract in October of 2004, as any good negotiator would do, including a major consultant, which I was. We closed it, I think, on December 29th, 2004. So many vendors like to get that revenue on their books by the end of the year. Moving on to the next side, further on system selection and planning, we had always known, Winthrop as an organization has 19 practices associated with 150 physicians in those practices in around our campus and within a 20-mile parameter. So to meet our clinical needs, we knew we had to go after an ambulatory EHR as well as automating the acute care environment. And we did a very rigorous selection process, but what highlighted the selection process was when the state put out for the HEAL grants, it was almost a perfect fit. We needed to do ambulatory EHR. They were looking for RIOs and building outreach programs to the community. We wrote the grant in terms of not just the ambulatory EHR, but where it fit within our clinical strategy, which was very, I believe, critical to winning that grant. We did put in for a $9.2 million grant, asking for $4.6 million reimbursement, but that was for our CPOE and EHR initiatives. What they did was they parsed all of the grants back, of course, but we received enough to cover about a third or a quarter or more of our EHR implementation. And again, you know, anything we can get is great because that's capital dollars we did not have to spend. This selection process was a little different than doing the CPOE process. And one of the reasons why I would like to highlight is the state of the federal government and the standards organizations and where they're moving there. It's becoming critical to IT directors or CIOs to understand that as the government pushes standards and creates them, this is the first time in my 15 years that I didn't have to write an RFP putting in functional requirements. We had the winning vendor, Allscripts, contractually commit to remaining CCHIP certified and to remaining at any other current governmental standards that come forth. CCHIP certification highlights 40 to 50 categories and groupings of functional requirements, basically, that they have to stay committed to over the next 5 years. It was a wonderful aspect and marketing tool for us. I mean, it gave us a very good strength with the vendor to ensure that we're staying within the realm of the new standards that are emerging. And in this process, we started with six vendors. And those six vendors, we parsed down to three. We had presentations from the three and did a very aggressive reference checking and other things, and as well as the RFP. And these two pages that follow are the actual summary of the major categories we used. And there was a lot of analysis that went on behind this. This by no means is the end-all. Each one of these categories had extensive research done on them, as well as direct presentations by our clinicians. And normally, within this graph, each of these questions or categories would have what we call the Harvey balls or the signature balls on the bottom of the page next to it, highlighting how the vendor provided or interacted with us. And Allscripts in almost every category did come out the highest, but the winning factor, I think, for them was that the clinicians really liked the product. We had probably 60 physicians from our practices sit in on two-day, full-day demos focusing on their specialty. We had the vendors in from 8 in the morning till 9 at night for 2 days, and they were exhausted when they left. But they had to talk to orthopedics as orthopedists wanted them to. They had to talk to cardiology as cardiology, pediatrics. Each had an hour and a half session with each of the vendors, and were able to look at the functionality, not in terms of overall functionality, but how do you meet my individual practice needs? And again, the winner through our selection was Allscripts, and that was about a year and a half process to get to totality on that. We did slow down a little bit waiting to determine whether we were going to win the HEAL grant. And as anybody that submitted or won grants understands, we submitted the contract last year in August. It still hasn't been signed. And we have not had the luxury to wait for the government, New York State and the DOH, to catch up with us. We're already implementing. So it's quite a challenge and balancing act. On the next page, from the system selection and planning aspects, this was the overall plan that we laid out at Winthrop over the next few years for major. Of course, there's 100 other things going on at any given point in time, but from the clinical aspects, these were some of the key features that we wanted to accomplish. Pharmacy went in very smoothly, upgraded well, established the integration with CPOE. The stars on this chart actually represent some of the milestones. If you look at CPOE in 2006, that would be the first milestone where we went up with our first two units or unit and then followed quickly with a second. And our implementation focus, we may vary by organization from other hospitals that are on this call in that we run at a very, very high census, and most times 85 to 90%, sometimes 98%. We wanted to do a service-oriented approach versus a floor-oriented approach. So we didn't pick 3 North Nursing Station and say we're going to do it. We picked surgery and said, we're going to do that first. One of the reasons was we wanted to shake out medicine, the pharmacy interfaces. We wanted to shake out a lot of the workflow, and we were able to do that on select surgical floors, we thought, better than we would have on medicine, especially the pharmacy component, because the Department of Medicine is so heavily dependent on pharmaceuticals for treatment. But it worked out well for us. The only problem we had is at any given point in time, we may have dual methods of charting going on a floor. If 3 North is considered a surgical floor, at any given point in time, we may have 5 medicine patients on that floor. Running at the census that we run, floors are not totally dedicated per service, and we do that to keep our beds occupied. It's a challenge, and we've been able to get through it, and actually the second star you see in 2007 means we're totally up with surgical services, which is probably about 30 to 35% of our population. Our next step for CPOE is going to do what we call the Big Bang, and we're going to bring medicine up at once in the fourth quarter of this year. I think that shows that we've gained, though, a lot of confidence over the last year and a half in confidence by the clinicians in the system that it's behaving and doing what it's supposed to do, especially on the pharmacy side. They would not probably pursue medicine in that approach if they had questions as to whether it would meet the needs of dispensement of pharmaceuticals. But it's been a big challenge. And then at the end of 07, the only remaining services we will have left, larger ones, would be OB, pediatrics, and some of the smaller, the NICU. But again, by the end of this year, we'll be up with all of our adult population. Of course, the reason OB and pediatrics was put off a bit was because of their specialty requirements in dosing and then requirements in how the order sets are generated because of the weight issues and others. From the clinical decision support and the rules base, we did purchase it from Siemens, but we've actually been a little disappointed in the product we purchased. The knowledge base that comes with the clinical decision support system from Siemens is more just setting up flags than embedding in workflow and forcing code to do the things we want it to do. We're going to have to actually build that in. It does bring value, but not as much as we had initially anticipated. That's for this product. Our wireless network, critical to this issue, I know Suzanne is very interested in the hardware, and we may talk about that later, but the wireless network, we realized that one portable device could probably replace 3 stationary devices. You can bring it with you. We are piloting up on our PACU Fujitsu tablets. They're working beautifully. Limited space, nowhere to put a computer. We do have a cow up there, computer on wheels, but they like the tablets up in that environment. On our surgical floors, we have 2 to 4 computers on wheels. Our approach was to take the hardware and put it in wallaroos between each of the rooms, not in the room. And, of course, we are right now piloting and going to move out the medication administration carts, which will have the barcoding capability and the med dispensing capability, which is another device. So at any point in time, we're going to have wireless up on the floors, probably in the area of 10 devices, with probably 30 devices in wallaroos and at the nursing stations. This is a hardware-intensive approach. We've decided to do an overkill and flood the area with hardware, monitor the hardware, and back it off rather than put it out there and have clinicians saying there's not enough.
That's great.
The ambulatory EMR, it was great, but it was costly.
I could imagine.
The ambulatory EMR selection was pretty aggressive, but tied to the HEAL grant, and we actually signed that agreement, and guess what a consultant would do? It was December 29th, 2006. Allscripts gave us a very, very favorable deal, and in that deal, they actually gave us their A4 emergency department system. We have put off deploying that because doing CPOE in 19 practices, we don't have enough resource potentially to do the ED at this time also. There is also major concern here, and I'll get to that later, about interoperability between disparate systems and how we're building the ultimate system for the clinician. Most of these systems were built for an environment and not necessarily for the doctor. And as I talk to our next steps in planning, I'll go into that in a little more depth as to what we see as our challenges. As mentioned, clinical documentation, we are rolling out assessment with MAC. PDA access, we have purchased the module, and believe it or not, many of our physicians that were very enamored with PDAs 2 to 3 years ago are now questioning their viability. Their concern is the limited real estate on the device and what you can do. Most vendors say you cannot do order entry from a PDA, so it becomes more an access device to look up labs and clinical data, which is valuable. And we do have the wireless environment. We just are not pushing that as a major initiative right now, and it may come that it will be there. And, of course, MAC, medication administration check, barcoded, using Lionville carts, portable, wireless, and that should be going up within the next month. So we've had many challenges over the last few years. System selection and planning, a few thoughts, the next page. A few final thoughts is this was actually presented from our CFO to the board about a year and a half ago as to the reasons for doing CPOE. And I think everybody would agree there are confirmed benefits to patient safety and quality of care. One of the slides in his packet was actually showing LeapFrog and the QA, the IOM reports on med dispensement. So I think many studies have been done, and we all know the benefit. It's convincing our senior management teams and getting their buy-in and having them on board that make this happen. And again, he stressed that there are verifiable operational benefits. We're seeing more of that now, especially with the need for the merger of financial and clinical information. This is going to be huge. And a comment some people have passed is if you're not in position with this moving into the future, you're going to have financial difficulties as well, you know, as the clinical and quality issues. Inherent redesign of clinical workflow. At the end of this, Susan speaks about communication. The redesign of clinical workflow is all about communication. It is critical. Nurses have to talk to pharmacists. The language that was once not there in terms of a nurse thought it was this, a pharmacist thought it was that, has to go away. We have discussions for hours on end here over the last year and a half as to what this means to a doctor, to a nurse, and to a pharmacist, and it turns out it doesn't mean the same thing to all three of them. So it's been quite a challenge, and we've had some great clinical leadership to help us with that. Industry increasing levels of investment in CIS, I think everybody's seeing that. These grants are one example of it. But I'm also a little disturbed in that the burden has to go back on the pharmaceutical companies, the vendors, other players than just the hospitals. It's difficult for us to finance the national health initiatives when we're running at a 0.5% margin or in the red. CIS is a building block to the EMR. And the national health information exchanges, I believe this is going to be our next challenge, that the clinical information systems and how we set them up in a brokered environment, especially after the recent announcements by the IE from national health information exchanges, how you can join and become a member of those exchanges, whether it's in the form of a RIO or at the national level. But getting at our clinical data is going to be our next major step, I believe. And we're starting to plan for that now. On the planning side, and this is probably just a summary, our strategic plan is 5 years old. It's time to do another. We're focusing on it. But I think some of the challenges that we're going to be realizing in the next few years is consistent provider interface. These systems were not necessarily built for doctors, or they come from multiple vendors and providers. And a physician sitting down who wants to see a snapshot of his patient when you're dealing with four different vendor products is not easy. And when you go to any one of the vendors, they challenge you. You know, it's going to cost a fortune. You got to buy this, this, and that. I think with the national standards emerging, it's going to be quite interesting in the next 3 to 5 years how the vendors react to providing the needs to do this. We run at a 1.5% operating budget here at Winthrop, which is very, very low. We're lean, we're mean, and we're trying to do a lot. But we're not going to invest in building software. It's just not what we do. It's not our core competency. Interoperability and standards, that's all part of this. It's very difficult to determine. I believe integration happens in three levels, one at the presentation layer where they're actually seeing the data, or a web-based interface would be an example. I believe it happens at the data level, which we are not very good at. I cannot place a call for data out of Allscripts into the Siemens databases and retrieve that data, and nor do I have the programming capacity here to do that. I would love to be able to, but we can't. And the third way is we try to synchronize data between systems through HL7 interfaces, which is wonderful, but it can be a nightmare at times when you're dealing with 100-plus interfaces. And I'm not sure we want to replicate the data all over the house, because then you do not necessarily have one place of truth for the data. So somehow we have to come to a marriage of those three different approaches for integration and determine how we can build interoperability for our client's gain, which is the patient and physician in this endeavor. And that's my next challenge. I want to figure that one out. And anybody that can help, boy, we could use the help. RIO or NHIE, federal government has just put out its requirements from four demonstration projects, summarized, I believe, by First Consulting. Grumman, IBM, two other major vendors, actually looked at the models for a national health information network, and they determined that what's going to happen is you're going to establish regional or local national health information exchanges. And I believe their approach is fairly strong, which is to develop a piece of brokerage software where if you can meet the emerging requirements to join that exchange and present your data, you will be certified to become part of the National Health Information Network. That is huge for us, because this challenge to meet the national emerging goals, which may be 5-7 years out, is the same challenge I'm faced with internally. How do I have a doctor that can sit and from either a brokered approach or an EMR get a clean snapshot of the patient over the continuum of care so that he can treat the patient to the best of his ability? I think we're starting to see some standards emerging which did not exist in the past, which will be wonderful. Multimedia convergence, we're dealing with here. We're just IP enabling our telephone switches. We will have IP-enabled voice data, and we have terabytes of data in our PAC systems at this point. We are also potentially looking at full-motion video, I would suspect, within the next 3 years. The infrastructure to accommodate these types of communications is going to be massive, and you really have to get your network architectures up to speed to accommodate what I believe is coming in the near future. Anybody that's buying the new iPod device can see what you can do now with broadband alone, let alone with a wired environment within your organization. And, of course, we have the amazing challenge of funding, which I believe everybody has. And that, I think, is up to us as IT people to not only define the challenges but to define the benefits and to some extent convince our boards and our senior administration that there's value in what we're doing. But we have to prove the value, and I think that's been one of IT's problems in healthcare in the past. It's been very difficult to prove quality, but the initiatives are coming much stronger and driving the case to build some of these clinical systems. And at this point, I want to turn it back over to Susan, and I'd like to thank everybody. This was a good opportunity for me just to summarize some of the things we think we've accomplished over the last few years, and I hope everybody has their challenges in line, too, because they are massive. And Susan, thank you.
Peter, thank you so much. I totally applaud your presentation. That was incredible. I also applaud your accomplishments there at Winthrop. And you articulated that so beautifully. Thank you. I wanted to get into communicating the vision, which we had talked about in our last call, but before I even get into that, I'd like to ask our audience if they have any questions for Peter, and I'd like to open up the lines. I think you can just, Yolanda, correct me if I'm wrong, just pick up your phone and ask Peter a question, and I can see lots of great places to ask questions to Peter. So please, feel free to start with the questions now.
Peter, this is Bill Gardner from iPro. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Bill. How are you?
Good. I do have a question for you. Can you speak a little more about the customization of your system? You know, sometimes when you buy a system, there's off-the-shelf components built into it. And by the sounds of things, you have really developed and had physician input into the customization. Now, was that something that you did specifically and had an awareness of going into the purchase of a product?
I've done one of these before on a lesser scale. So, yeah, we knew we needed to. When any vendor that brings the product to you always says it's a vanilla product and it takes work. I think the product you pick probably determines the degree of work you need. But in any case, if the clinicians won't use it, you may as well throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
We are in another unique position here in that we are a teaching facility who have an extensive pool of residents. We have a high number of PAs and NPs. I asked at one of our committee meetings in the last few weeks how many voluntaries were actually entering CPOE orders, and they said it was fairly limited. In the surgical services, they tend to just give the orders to the PA or the resident, and they write the orders. It is more difficult when you're dealing in a voluntary hospital to gain the approach with the physicians interacting directly with the system.
Mm-hmm.
I am not sure we would have picked the system we had used if I was in that environment. I don't know. But I do know that I would have had the voluntary population more prominent in the selection. We used many of our associated physicians during that selection process. So there are challenges based on the type of facility you are also.
Uh-huh.
Back to your question, no matter what product I believe you buy, you're going to have to do a lot of tailoring. And it's also the way your clinical practice operates internally, which varies from hospital to hospital. A single vendor, there is no turnkey solution for this. I don't think there is.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I have a question, Peter.
Sure.
On the handheld devices, how did you pilot those devices? How did you, come to the conclusion, I think we'll use these Toshiba laptops or these Toshiba tablet PCs, excuse me?
We got beat up. Part of this is trial and error. Our PACU has no wall space, no desk space, no counter space. We had a few thin clients up there, but if you're doing surgical services and the patient's coming out of the OR and putting orders directly in, even if they're going to stop in 12 hours to bring on the next set of orders from the physicians, you have to be able to work in the OR, the PACU, in the ASU, and we had to outfit those areas. In our case, in the PACU, there was just no space. We tried two cows up there, and they were bumping into everybody with them. It was easier to have a checkout system for notebooks where they could actually carry it to the bedside. So it varies by location, what we're implementing. Some of our units in the hospital are 3 years old, a renovated pavilion, new pavilion. Some of them are 30 years old. Within each of those environments, we have to assess and determine what's best, and also speaking with the clinicians, what they think their needs are on those units.
So at what point of the implementation did you do that assessment, right up front?
Yes, but we were wrong. For instance, we didn't know the level of focus and attention we needed to pay to the PACU and the OR. It was a growing process, and I will admit at times it was painful. Surgeons and physicians would come for a month and complain, and we had to struggle to react to those situations. But that may be part of this growing process. I don't know. The level of planning you would have to do to get inside their heads and look at their workflow, we did not do it as exhaustively probably as we should have. But on the other hand, as long as they're willing to work with us, we were able to get through the hurdles.
So that brings to light the critical importance of doing the workflow planning and analyzing of each one of the departments up during this implementation.
Yes, but I'll give you, I believe you can plan and plan and plan, and you're still going to have some of these instances.
Sure.
I have a question in regards to physicians. How much time was required for the committee chairs? I know that that's going to be a critical component for us to get physician involvement in the first place, and I would really have to go to them with some upfront, realistic idea about how much time, and I'm thinking it's going to take quite a bit of time.
Actually, not as much as you would think.
Okay.
I did most of the work in terms of setting up the committees, writing the agendas. I used Siemens to assist me in doing the minutes. Pre-met. They were part of the design teams. I would probably say about 10 hours a month.
Okay.
And
within those 10 hours, what sorts of...
Again, though, we had a very unique environment. We had a PA here who stepped to the forefront, our director of physician's assistants. And Maureen actually took the realm from the physicians and championed the design effort. She was able to interpret between nursing, physicians, pharmacy, the design considerations and set the red flags to bring back to the physicians when they weren't correct. What we've also done is in our order set and standardization development, the chairs have to sign off on the order sets being developed for their areas. So we're very heavily dependent on Maureen is our go-between and our design specialist.
Okay, so you actually had a clinical person in an informatics role.
Yes.
Liaison.
In fact, I believe she's going to be named the CMIO here, which is unusual. It's usually a doctor, but she's shown she can champion that position.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
And of course, we also have nurse informatics people on board. We have some very strong nurse informaticists who have been here for 15 years, know the environment, and have known the Siemens products.
Peter, I have a question. This is Mary Carr Baramita from Generations Plus.
Hi.
What kind of planning and implementation have you had done for your facility now that you're a CPOE in terms of disaster, meaning downtime?
Actually, it's interesting because that's one of our concerns. But we, of course, have our standardized paper backups. But what we've also done is we have a product here called Standard Register, which does forms on demand. And what we're doing is as we were building the order sets and the clinical documentation through CPOE, whether it's screen or paper-based, we're replicating it in forms in demand and have the ability to print standard stuff with the patient identifiers up at the floors. In other words, we're going to try and pick designated PC, one or two on the floors, and in an emergency downtime, they can actually print off the standard work sets. That's been a challenge, and we've had an extensive team looking at that.
Great question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marikar. Does anyone else have questions for Peter? Well, I think that actually about concludes our time today. I am going to post something else on the internet, repost today's system selection and planning tool. I added, at the end of the tool, I added some of the comments, you know, that Peter was going to talk about today, and, you know, just about 6 bullet points that we would like you to keep in mind when you're implementing your projects. Peter, that was an amazing presentation. I can't thank you enough for sharing that with our HIT group. I think that we've all really benefited from it.
You're welcome, HIT group.
Thank you.